This is the Dr. Touch podcast. Episode 7, Shaken, Not Stirred. Welcome to another episode of the Dr. Touch podcast. This is episode 007, so that's why I chose this title. And these are the news. Second video streaming app now available. As previously reported, Knocking was the first app to allow beaming video from one iPhone to another. Now the Ustream app has been updated with similar capability. Previous versions of the Ustream apps only allowed recording of video for later upload to the internet. With the new free Ustream Live Broadcaster app, you can stream video from your device to the web to cater for your inner reporter. More details emerged in the Molinka case, where a developer based in China got his contract with Apple terminated over faking reviews for his own apps. Somebody going by the acronym SCW wrote a letter directly to Phil Schiller documenting the fraud, to which the head honcho responded, "Yes, this developer's apps have been removed from the App Store and the ratings no longer appear either." Molinka, when contacted for comment, responded that they had not heard from Apple but only found their contract going to status pending. The website still appears on Google search results but apparently has been taken offline due to the Category 8 crap storm the media coverage of this case has probably caused. It might be hypocritical to raise a warning finger when we are all probably guilty of leaving single reviews for our own apps. But now we know what happens if you're overdoing it. Tablet rumors. Oppenheimer analyst Yair Reiner wants to make Apple stock look even more promising and therefore predicts production of the fabled Apple tablet to begin in February next year. It's supposed to be sporting a 10.1-inch LCD display, same technology as in the iPhone, no OLED in sight. Launch could be March or April. What's interesting though is that apparently Apple has been approaching book publishers and offered them the same 70-30 revenue split that we iPhone developers are getting today. This is a really good deal for publishers who normally get around 50% of cover price. So if you have ideas today that are too big for the iPhone screen, don't throw them away just yet for lack of feasibility. It is very likely that on the WWDC 2010 we'll be getting the big screen multi-touch SDK extensions. So you will most likely be able to reuse assets and code for this new platform. I foresee that you won't be able to run iPhone apps directly on the iTablet, but instead will be able to build separate apps with the SDK. And if development does not work out for you, maybe becoming a book author might be in your future. There's another side effect of the iTablet. Due to the disparity of the euro and the dollar, I could save a couple of $100 on a MacBook if I purchased it in the States, though it costs 100 euros or more to get the keyboard replaced to German layout. Now the iTablet might be the first device that actually makes sense to purchase while you're visiting the US, say for example attending WWDC, because there is no keyboard to change. I just hope the customs officers believe me when I tell them I could not have bought it in the USA. See, the on-screen keyboard, it's German. New iPhone is coming next year as well. Well, that's not really a rumor. We can assume that Apple will stick to the previous pattern and continue to release a new iPhone every year until the whole earth has iPhones. A journalist had tweeted that manufacturer Foxconn has supposedly received the contract to build the next iPhone. Though, will it really be an iPhone? I've been saying all along that the S in iPhone 3GS stands for small and that the medium and large iPhones will be in fact medium and large size tablets. Or so goes my letter to Santa Claus. But in any case, we have previously heard that the device string of the iPhone 4G has already been seen roaming around in the San Francisco area. Seems that Apple liked the prototype so that Foxconn will been manufacturing now. Let the dreaming begin. What kind of better technology and additional gadgetry will it contain? Maybe a near-field communication chip? Since the start of sales in October, China Unicom sold 100,000 iPhones. That's not much compared to their 144 million subscribers, but it's still an indication that it might start to make sense to start making apps specific to this market. Speaking of Chinese, Apple has announced that iTunes metadata can now be localized in 6 more languages: Brazilian Portuguese, Korean, Portuguese, Russian, simplified Chinese, and Swedish. After the Knocking and Ustream video streaming apps had been approved, now Quik has submitted their previously rejected streaming app. Chances are good that they will also finally land on the App Store, so all the big developers know how to grab video from the camera and regular developers don't. If you search for strings in the Ustream Broadcaster app, you see that there's a mention of UI get screen image inside. So most likely there is no API to get the video, but they simply make screenshots continuously and then encode them, maybe with FFmpeg. Yuck! But it works okay. I tried it out and found the video quality coming from my 3GS satisfactory for ad hoc broadcasting. So we can assume that Quik uses the very same screen grabbing method as the two others. Coming to think of it, it's been very long since the last update to the SDK, so what's going on? Apple packaging something big into the next SDK version? Or are there no bugs left and everything hunky-dory until the next hardware update in summer 2010? Apple releases newer layout for the iTunes App Store. A picture says more than 1,000 words, you know? So the new design shows an even larger app icon and only the first paragraph of the description. You get the rest of the text via a more link. If there's an update, then you see right below the first paragraph of the description what's contained in the latest update. Below you see the big and beautiful screenshots in a horizontal gallery, similar to what we have become acquainted with on the mobile app store. App relevant stats like the ratings are now in a small box on the lower left. I must say it's beautiful and will probably impact conversion rates a bit. It's old knowledge that attractive pictures sell more goods. And having them so high up means that the user does not have to scroll down, this is what they call above the fold, on web pages and newspapers. So thank you, Apple, for making this an even nicer experience for the users who look for our apps on desktop iTunes. Now for a little bit of programming. I wrote a blog article how to make a pull to reload table view just like Tweety 2. When I started on Twitter, I tried out a few Twitter clients both on Mac and iPhone until I quickly settled on Tweety. When Lauren Richter made the bold move to sell Tweety 2 as a separate app, I also purchased it, because I'm convinced this guy means quality and Tweety 2 is on the first page of my springboard. One thing that's cool about Tweety 2 is the fresh paradigm of refreshing the contents of a table view. Up until now we had been looking for space to mount the release button on, sometimes having to resort to adding an extra toolbar for just one view so that you can have enough space. Now, if you have a table view that is sorted reverse chronologically, then you have a natural urge to make new items appear at the top by pulling down the table with extra force. Like pull, there must be some, if I just pull strong enough, something should appear. Lauren recognized this need and innovated the pull to reload paradigm. If you want to refresh a table view in Tweety 2, then you simply pull down the table far enough for an additional cell to appear on the top with the instruction pull down to refresh. If you do, then at a certain point the arrow rotates and the text changes to release to refresh, all accompanied by two distinct swooshing sounds and a pop once the reloading action has ceased. The intuitiveness of this paradigm is so compelling, in fact, that people who use Tweety 2 start to try to refresh all table views like this. Now, I experimented a little bit around. I mounted a subview onto a table view to see that this actually gets scrolled with it as well, but I wasn't able to get it animated. Somebody pointed me then to a guy who goes by the nickname of Enormego, Devin Dotti. He made a open source implementation of this, and the ingredients that I was missing was that UI table view is actually a child class of UI scroll view, so the delegate for it will also get the scrolling delegate method calls. And that's where you can hook in. So if you work out the logic like Devin does or did, what to do in the three methods that I used, then you can hook the appropriate animations to the appropriate events, and you end up with a very nice thing there. Have a look at the article on my blog describing how I chose to do it, because I was not kind of approving of the way that Devin did it. He subclassed TableView and had TableView do too many things that are actually more suitable for the controller, if you think of the model view controller paradigm. So I made it in a table view controller class, and I don't change table view at all. And I also had to do some modifications because I was using the pull to reload in the latest update for my app sales. So if you are too lazy to copy the code from my blog post, then just go to your source code for my app sales, update it, and you get the classes. And implementing it in your own table views is very simple. You only have to change the UI table view controller word for a pull to refresh table view controller. And that's it. And then you implement a method that gets called when reloading should happen, also in your table view controller class, and that's it. It just works. And if you don't have the source code yet for my app sales, this would now be a great time to donate $15 to support my work, and you get the code for it, and also a very nice reporting app that's great on the move. So that's it for today. I hope there was something in it for you as well. And may all your table views in the future feature pull to refresh.